Welcome to the UU Bible Study Podcast. It is such a joy to be with you today. My name is the Reverend Samuel Felderman, and I am blessed to be here with my colleague.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Grove, and it's really good to be with Samuel and you all on this day.
Friends, we are just coming out of the Christmas season, the holiday seasons. We have so many people around the world celebrating so many different expressions of what it means that the light has come and the light has been born. And we are so excited to be joining you. Our texts today, following the Christian lectionary, of course, are centered around Christmas, where we are officially in what's known as the Christmas tide, or the period after Christmas, of sort of celebrating what it means that in this particular expression of faith, what it means that the light has come and has been born among us. Interestingly, however, our texts today actually don't start with the light being born. Well, sort of, if we might say it that way, because we are jumping all the way back to the very beginning of the Bible, to the very beginning of the Hebrew Scriptures, because today we are going to be looking at one of the creation stories. There are two creation stories in the Bible, in the first two chapters of the book of Genesis, and we're going to be exploring the second story today. We are so excited that you're here. Our texts today, so you have them in front of you before we begin, are, of course, Genesis chapter 2, and we'll be looking at verses 7 through 9, verses 15 through 17, and verses 21 through 25. And we will talk a little bit about why we're jumping between verses so much. And then our psalm of the day is Psalm chapter 8. We will be looking at the whole psalm. And this is a beautiful hymn, this beautiful text, and we are excited to share it with you. So we invite you to sit back, relax, grab yourself your cup of coffee or tea, and settle in and join us for this incredible conversation we are about to have.
Well, it's so good to be with all of you. We're going to begin today by hearing the psalm, Psalm 8, from the Common English Bible. Hear this translation. Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. You made your glory higher than heaven. From the mouths of nursing babies, you have laid a strong foundation because of your foes in order to stop vengeful enemies. When I look up at the skies, at what your fingers made, the moon and the stars that you set firmly in place, what are human beings that you think about them? What are human beings that you pay attention to them? You've made them only slightly less than divine, crowning them with glory and grandeur. You've let them rule over your handiwork, putting everything under their feet, all sheep and all cattle, the wild animals too, the birds in the sky, the fish of the ocean, everything that travels the pathways of the sea. Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. And now, my friends, we invite you to hear this psalm again, as it is translated by Reverend Dr. Wilda C. Gaffney in the book Year W. Samuel, are you ready?
Friends, Psalm chapter 8. O womb of life, our sovereign, how exalted is your name in all the earth. Out of the mouths of children and nursing babes, your majesty is praised above the heavens. You have founded a stronghold against your adversaries to put an end to the enemy and the avenger. When I consider your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars you have established, what are we that you should be mindful of us, the woman born that you should attend to us? You have made us a little lower than you. You adorn us with glory and honor. You give us mastery over the works of your hands. You put all things under our feet, all sheep and oxen, even the wild beasts of the field, the birds of the air, and the fish of the sea, and whatsoever walks on the paths of the sea. O womb of life, our sovereign, how exalted is your name in all the earth.
Ah, my friends, and now I invite you to listen again to the Jewish scripture as it comes from Genesis 2, verses 7 to 9, 15 to 17, and 21 to 25. This is Dr. Gaffney's translation. The sovereign God crafted the human from the dust of the humus and breathed into its nostrils the breath of life, and the human became a living soul. When the sovereign God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there placed the human whom God had formed, out of the ground the sovereign God made grow every tree pleasant to the sight and good for food, and the tree of life in the middle of the garden, along with the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The sovereign God took the human and settled it in the Garden of Eden to till and to tend it. Then the sovereign God commanded the human, "From every tree of the garden you may eat freely, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day you eat from it, you shall surely die." The sovereign God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the human, and it slept, then took one of its sides and closed up its place with flesh in place of it. And the sovereign God built the side that had been taken from the human into a woman and brought her to the human. And then the human said, "This time, this one is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one shall be called a woman, for out of a man this one was taken. Therefore, a man leaves his mother and his father and clings to his woman, and they become one flesh. And they were, the two of them, naked, the man and his woman, or the woman and her man, and were not ashamed." Ah, Samuel, once again. Okay, I'm always afraid to ask this, but I am going to ask. What are you thinking about?
Well, Michelle, as every week comes and goes, I have so many things to say and so many things that I'm thinking about. Friends, there is so much in this story. There's so many things for us to look at in this story. But I actually want to start by highlighting what we've not read, which maybe seems like an odd thing. But as was earlier mentioned, you'll notice that we sort of jumped verses through chapter 2. And I would actually encourage our listeners, friends, please, please go and read the whole chapter of Genesis chapter 2. I would actually invite you to also read chapter 1 of the book of Genesis. And here's why. There are two distinct creation stories that are recorded for us in the book of Genesis. there's this reality that there were two separate stories, an older story and a newer story, the older story being the one that we heard, we've just read, that older story and this newer story were sort of competing texts that different parts of the Hebrew faith were using, and they were put together into one narrative. But they are very distinct, and there's a number of ways that they're distinct. If you were to go and read, and I encourage you to do so, if you go and read Genesis chapter 1, what you will find is I think we can probably say culturally, the more common creation story. In that story in Genesis 1, the creation of the world is done over 7 days. And it begins with that beautiful statement, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And as the days of creation go on, God creates everything from the seasons. He brings the dry land out of the sea. He brings the sea together. He makes the sun, the moon, and the stars, the fish and the birds and the plants and everything. And on the sixth day, the crowning achievement of creation, the last thing that gets made, is humans. And it's actually really interesting that in the first creation story, there's this call and response almost, that God speaks and the thing comes into being. So God says, let there be light. And then there is light. God says, let there be fish in the sea and birds in the air. And suddenly there are fish in the sea and birds in the air. And in Genesis 1 in the first chapter of Genesis, I'll actually find it and read it to you. This pattern is followed when it comes to the creation of humans. And in verse 26 of Genesis chapter 1, and this is out of the NRSV, it says, and God says, I'm sorry, in 26, God says, let us make humans in our own image, according to our own likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, and over the wild animals. And then 27 says, so God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, they were created, male and female. God created them. So following this story, if all we had was the first creation story, we would assume that in the same way that God spoke and then there was light and God spoke, that this story is simply God speaking and men and women, male and female, would be created out of nothing. But of course, we don't just have the first creation story. We have the second creation story. We have in Genesis chapter 2 that we read from, this older creation narrative that actually goes backwards. The first thing that comes into being in the second creation story is humans. We're told, if you read the first couple of verses of chapter 2, that there's dry land, but there's not anything there yet. There's a mist that sort of rises. It's this strange sort of primordial world. And humans are made first. God breathes life into this thing made of dust, and it becomes a living being. And then God calls all of the trees and the flowers and all these things to life and puts the human in a garden to take care of it. And of course, we read that portion. Then there's this other portion that we skipped over that I think is really fun and sort of silly. And so I do invite everyone to read the whole chapter. We come to the realization that God realizes that the human is lonely and needs someone. So God starts making animals and brings the animals to the human to see if it's a good fit. So you have this really crazy moment, if you envision it, of God presenting the human with a peacock and then God presenting the human with a cow and all these things and saying, is this a good fit? Is this a good fit? And the human over and over again gives them names, but nothing is the fit. Which is why then when we hear the text that we heard today, then the sovereign God caused a deep sleep to fall on the human. It's because we've tried everything else and nothing's working. Which is why then in 23, the human says, this time, you can sort of imply this time, finally, this is a bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman, for out of me she was taken. So there's this connection that's finally been made, that the poor human, the poor Adam, we would call him Adam, has done a tour of every living thing on earth and has not found anything suitable until the creation of woman. So again, for our listeners, please go back and read Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and look at how they're different, but also this, as this story unfolds, I think it's well worth your time. So those are some of the things I wanted to talk about, Michelle.
What oh my gosh, it's amazing. Well, and before we get off that subject, because there's something that hit me in the reading of this that I also think is important to lift up for the listener. The human is also in relationship with God and still lonely. God is not the right fit here either, correct?
That's a
God
really
is not
thing
enough.
To think about.
I know, right? But think about it. I mean, here is God and the human in relationship, and God working hard to please the human and find the right fit, knowing that even though that God is not enough. So what does that say about the beginning of the relationship between the divine and the human? You know, and what does it say about the human's need for community? In that. So yeah. So that the subjects that you brought up are some of the things I've been thinking about. You know, and the other thing that I have really pondered, which I've been pondering for decades with this is the issue of male and female, and how our society and society for centuries has used stories like this story and others, to create a hierarchy of male higher than female. So male, you know, more superior, male more superior, female lesser. And we've developed all kinds of laws, all kinds of societal structures that put that into place. And those of us who identify as women have kind of walked that journey and tried to sort that out. To be honest, everybody, no matter what your gender, you know, however expansive, has walked that and has had a different role in that based on how you identify. And yet, it's Christianity that has been very specific about literal translation. If we go, you know, to the Jewish studies, like looking at the Talmud, and our Jewish neighbors are not as tied up in literal translation. That is not something that you see as important. So one of the things that I have enjoyed reading is the Woman's Torah commentary. I would highly recommend that for anybody here. And Samuel, you're the one who recommended it to me, so thank you, you know, for that recommendation. And Rabbi Lori Foreman wrote the article on Genesis and points this out very clearly, that it was a human. It did not have the separation. It was not a man. It was not a specific gender, that it was very much a human, and that it wasn't that the woman was taken from the man and separated to be the companion. It's that that was a bisexual, double-faced being. And I just quoted Rabbi Foreman, you know, when I said that. Foreman says, Adam was a bisexual, double-faced being, neither male nor female. And then when this being went into the deep sleep, God divided the two out. You know, I absolutely love it when we can start to expand how story has meaning. Because our society has used stories like this for harm and oppression as a way of keeping those who are not the dominant gender, which is cisgendered male, down, right? Keeping those genders kind of oppressed in some way. We do it with our laws. We do it in all kinds of ways. And yet, if we can start to expand our thinking and look at stories from different ways, maybe we can start to reframe and bring people into more of a collaborative, equal footing that we are all of value and that we all have the autonomy within the society. I don't know what other thoughts that you have on this, because this is a deep and rich one.
Yeah, boy, that's an understatement, deep and rich. We've spoken of before that whether you are religious or not, whether you use the Bible religiously or not, one of the deeply important things that we all need to understand, whether this is a text of religious relevance to you or not, is that it is a political text. It is a
Yes.
text that informs the way that our society is structured. And
Great.
we can turn to this text and see that this text, among others, but this text has had such an impact on how our society functions that knowing the story is very, very useful. Knowing the story has a political and social element that we absolutely just simply cannot ignore, right? So when we think about why, as a society, why women weren't allowed to have credit cards until the 1970s, right? That's actually connected to this story. It's connected to the idea that the man was created first. That's literal understanding that Adam came first. And so women are meant to be sort of they are a lesser being and can't necessarily be trusted. This story connected with the fall narrative, which is in the next in Genesis chapter 3, sort of weaves this really or I don't want to say weaves a narrative that women are untrustworthy. The way it's interpreted has been very
Good.
much used that way to say
Yeah.
that women are
Yeah.
lesser and not trustworthy. We see that this story comes up around its connection. It's also worth noting that at the end of our reading, we have this little section about marriage. And so, because of this, right? It says, because of this, a man leaves his mother and his father and cleaves to his wife. Right. So anytime there's been a debate around the idea of marriage in our society, this is a story that shows up. Right. So when we were debating the idea of no-fault divorce way back in the Reagan era, when people were trying to decide as a society, we were trying to decide if women could divorce their husbands, right? This was the question. Well, biblical marriage is a man and a woman for life, and it's right here, right? This also, of course, then came up around the gay marriage debate, right?
Right.
The famous saying, "It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve," originates from this text,
Okay.
where woman came out of man, and this is so. I point this out because this idea that this is just a cute story from ancient times, it is just inaccurate. It impacts this very text impacts the way that we move through the world and the way that minorities are impacted, the ways that my ability to get married as a gay man, my ability to marry another man was only decided by the Supreme Court 8 years ago.
Eight, yep.
Right. And this is the story. So this idea that this story is just a story of no real relevance to us is not true. And whoever you are, wherever you're coming from on this journey with us, this story is one that you really do need to know. Because
Yes.
as crazy as it might sound, the creation stories from Genesis are some of the most important and impactful stories we have in the political sphere. And we need to, being able to dialogue with them is essential to be able to move through our social and political spheres today.
It's true. And even dealing with their difficult pieces. You know, that's one of the things I'm really enjoying about Dr. Gaffney's work is that, you know, she is not glazing over what's difficult. By verse 23, the transition from the human to that being identified as man is clear in the story. It's absolutely clear, you know. For out of a man this one was taken. That is the translation. So we have to struggle with the fact that this kind of hierarchy is built into the story, which means it was built into the culture in which it was first told, and then again when it was first written down, right? That somewhere in there, it is still there. And I think what I'm enjoying is Dr. Gaffney and other theologians inviting us to reframe that, including, you know, our Jewish brothers and sisters who for centuries have been inviting us into that conversation, right?
Absolutely.
So.
And again, it's worth noting, as we stated earlier, we actually have two separate creation stories.
Right.
And in the newer creation story from the first chapter of Genesis, man and woman are created at the same time. They're created ex nihilo. They're spoken into existence together. It's this second text that gives us, there's this strange difference that exists there. And we've sort of, as a society, sort of ignored the first telling in favor of the second telling that puts women at a sort of a lower level. I wanted to share, if you'll allow me, I
Go
wanted
for it.
To share. So, you know, as I stated earlier, in earlier podcasts, we've talked about the fact that I was raised in a very conservative Christian household. And as soon as I came to this text, I remembered this quote that I had heard from like children's Sunday school, right? Thinking about this text. And I went hunting for it, and I was close enough to the quote that I was able to find it pretty easily on Google. But this is the thing that I heard probably for the first time in second grade, I think, probably second grade and all the way up. And I want to share this because in one sense, it's a really beautiful quote. It's very well written. But I'd also like to, there are things about it once you hear it that I'm hoping we can sort of unpack, so to speak. So this quote is actually from a man named Matthew Henry. He was a 16th century Welsh theologian. And he says this in his commentary about this text. He says, "The woman was made out of the rib, out of the side of Adam, not from his head so that she should rule over him, nor out of his feet that she should be trampled upon by him, but out of his side, to be equal with him, under his arm, to be protected, and near his heart, to be loved." Now, I share that with you. I share this here because, on the one hand, it's actually, in one way, a really beautiful text. It's got this sort of lovely lilt to it. But even most positively, Matthew is pointing out that women are to be protected. They're
right.
to be, there's to be sort of coddled in a way that, so when you think about, when we think about patriarchy, when we think about gender roles, when we think about societal norms, I encourage our listeners who are probably not from the tradition that I was raised in, who are probably not, I invite you to think about me as a seven-year-old being told from the age of seven that it was my responsibility to protect the women around me and hold them close because they couldn't take care of themselves. And that my goal in life, my job in life, was to grow up and marry a woman and take care of her, right? So you start to see how societally that plays out in patriarchy. You also can see the trauma that that might carry, the religious sort of baggage that that carries for someone who then realizes that they're gay and that that this is not the story that they fit into. So there's the, I lift this up not to bash Matthew Henry. I'm sure he was a nice guy. but even in the most positive light, even in the most positive way of telling this story from a patriarchal, hierarchical sense, there's a complicated narrative that only some people will ever fit into.
Right. That's it. Yes. And I think those are the things that hopefully the listener is holding as they reflect on this. And I know one of my goals is helping to expand and to reframe so that we can, you know, bring more justice, more equity within, you know, our conversations. The story's hierarchy is there. It's embedded in the story. We can hold that. And I'll tell you, Samuel, we can also hold everybody, you included, knowing that these stories have done harm. And how can we hold space for that so that we can start to repair, start to expand, so that there is freedom in this? Because this kind of hierarchy does not resonate with the God of love. And I think that's the wrestling that I'm doing. All right.
Friends, there is so much more that we could say. I feel like Michelle and I could probably be with you for hours, but we're going to leave it there. Please, again, consider going back and reading both Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2 and sit with this text and everything that we've talked about. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about what you think, what you felt as you read over this. We are so grateful for you being on this journey with us, and we look forward to seeing you next week.